Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. O descendant of Bhrigu, Shaunaka, after performing funeral rituals for the dead body of Bhishma Dev, Maharaj Yudhishthir was momentarily overtaken with grief. Purport: Bhishma Dev was not only a great family head of Maharaj Yudhishthir, but also he was a great philosopher and friend to him, his brothers and his mother. Since Maharaj Pandu, the father of the five brothers headed by Maharaj Yudhishthir, had died, Bhishma Dev was the most affectionate grandfather of the Pandavas and caretaker of the widow daughter-in-law Kunti Devi. Although Maharaj Dasharath, Dhritarashtra, the elder uncle of Maharaj Yudhishthir, was there to look after them, his affection was more on the side of his 100 sons, headed by Duryodhana. Ultimately, a colossal clique was fabricated to deprive the five fatherless brothers of the rightful claim of the kingdom of Hastinapur. There was great intrigue common in imperial palaces, and the five brothers were exiled to wilderness. But Bhishma Dev was always a sincerely sympathetic well-wisher, grandfather, friend, and philosopher to Maharaj Yudhishthir. Even up to the last moment of his life, he died very happily by seeing Maharaj Yudhishthir to the throne. Otherwise, he would have long ago quitted his material body instead of suffering agony over the undue sufferings of the Pandavas. He was simply waiting for the opportune moment, because he was sure and certain that the sons of Pandu would come out victorious in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, as his lordship Sri Krishna was their protector. As a devotee of the Lord, he knew that the Lord's devotee cannot be vanquished at any time. Maharaj Yudhishthir was quite aware of all these good wishes of Bhishma Dev, and therefore he must have been feeling the great separation. He was sorry for the separation of a great soul and not for the material body which Bhishma Dev relinquished. The funeral ceremony was a necessary duty, although Bhishma Dev was a liberated soul. Since Bhishma Dev was without issue, the eldest grandson, namely Maharaj Yudhishthir, was a rightful person to perform this ceremony. It was a great boon to Bhishma Dev that an equally great son of the family undertook the last rites of a great man. Om Agyanti Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataranam Paramananda Madhavam Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vancha Kalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna, I seek the blessings of all the assembled devotees. This is my first time, speaking in such a setting apart from my home temple, which used to be the Seattle temple. But my confidence comes from the fact, and I feel peaceful, that if I make mistakes, I know I will be corrected and we will have a good discussion here. I'm very fortunate to get this chance, and without further delay, we will get into the topic. So translation: O descendant of Bhrigu Shaunaka, after performing funeral rituals for the dead body of Bhishma Dev, Maharaj Yudhishthir was momentarily overtaken with grief. So there are a few themes here that I'm inspired to share as a part of the discussion today. So one aspect that I thought I would like to cover is you know, the passing away of Bhishma Dev briefly, because that has been covered, you know, over the previous verses by the various devotees who have been speaking about this topic. Then discussion on Yudhishthir's grief, whether it's material or spiritual. And then the whole concept of ancestor veneration and Krishna consciousness. So what is the importance of last rites and the different ceremonies that take place, and how does it align with Krishna consciousness? And the different personalities in our scriptures who have stressed on the importance of doing something like that. So there are two parts to this. Maharaj Yudhishthir being overtaken by grief, and the Nirharanadini, the funeral ceremony for the dead body of Bhishma Dev. So we've, over, you know, the previous verses, we have received a lot of different lessons on how, you know, the passing away of a great devotee of the Lord. And we can only, I mean, we can attempt to follow in the footsteps of glorious devotees like Bhishma Dev that have been explained, you know, in the past. And when I was coming from the airport yesterday, I was being driven by a team of devotees who are, who I believe their service is the Vaishnava care, you know, and the concerns around, you know, the health of, you know, elderly Vaishnavas, and then, you know, ensuring that they have a proper situation in which they can depart. And I felt very fortunate that we belong to this great, you know, mission of Srila Prabhupada, that, you know, such a wonderful, you know, such wonderful facilities are being created in different parts of the world, so that Vaishnavas have an opportunity to not only take care of their physical needs, but also their spiritual needs at the time of passing away. And that has been stressed so much in the Bhagavad Gita. And now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary explains, and even Srila Prabhupada explains over here, that Bhishma Dev's leaving the body is not a material, you know, phenomena. It is not someone like who's forced to leave the material body. Here we are observing a devotee where, you know, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains this. He's a person who has attained the Supreme Lord completely. And that is what the word Samparetasya explains. And when in the previous descriptions in, I think it's text 44 or 43, I don't remember, where it is said about that Bhishma Dev is stopping his breath and giving up his body, it is not a material forced extrication of out of the body. It is very different, because he has simply become detached from the material phenomena. And he was here for a service. Service is complete. He's become detached from that material phenomena. So we don't say that he's giving up a material body and giving up breathing. And here we see Yudhishthir is momentarily overtaken by grief, the passing of the grandsire of the Kuru dynasty. And Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport here that, you know, so many different you know, ways in which Bhishma Dev was always such a great Suhridam, such a great well-wisher for the Pandavas. And at every step, not just like, you know, not just like a family member, but also as, you know, the Kshatriya king, ensuring that the right, you know, right ruler sit on the throne of the Hastinapur going forward before he leaves this place. And also as, in some ways, also as a guru, as a mentor, as a spiritual guide, as a well-wisher. The Pandavas were in such a difficult situation. Imagine being constantly, you know, being in, you know, how long can we handle a negative situation in our life, you know? If we have to deal with somebody who is very negative, even in their own thoughts, even if they're not harming us in any way, it becomes very difficult for us sometimes to, you know, be in their presence. But imagine being in a place where, you know, someone's out to get you, someone's out to kill you all the time. But here, Bhishma Dev is providing the necessary support and the necessary refuge, loving refuge for the Pandavas and the shelter to the best of his capacity. So when Yudhishthir is momentarily overtaken by grief, his grief is not considered to be in the mode of ignorance. It is not a mundane grief where, oh, someone left the body and we are crying in that sense. His grief is coming from all the remembrances and all the gratitude that he had towards Bhishma Dev and the loving exchanges that he have had. And the grief is also coming from the fact that now, because Bhishma Dev is not present in that form, the form of the body, where he can have that loving exchange with him, so he doesn't have that opportunity to express his love and respect in the same way as anymore. So the grief process is, you know, is something that is out of gratitude. He's missing him. He's relieving his, you know, emotions like that. And if, so The second aspect of this verse is that when Yudhishthir is grieving, but at the same time it has been stressed here, and everything in the Bhagavatam is very important. That's something first when I used to read Srimad Bhagavatam, I would not understand like, okay, why is this particular point covered? But as I hear from various spiritual teachers, I understand that everything that is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam is absolutely relevant for our spiritual lives. So here, when it is described that when Bhishma Dev, even when he went back to the spiritual Supreme Personality of Godhead, what is the need for proper last rites? Now, one may say that his body is completely spiritual. One may say that why did, a great devotee like Yudhishthir Maharaj, have to explain and, have to engage in something, so ritualistic when he's a Krishna conscious devotee, Bhishma Dev is a Krishna conscious devotee, and what is the need for these things? We could have just done something simply. But here, the last rites is something that is considered to be very, very important in the spiritual culture, and not just in our culture, in various cultures across the world. Now, the first thing that this whole last rites topic is that it is respecting the body of the person, right? We're respecting the physical form of the person. Even when the person is present in front of us, alive in front of us, we are offering our respects to the body of the person, by bowing down to the person, by treating the body of the person properly. So even at death, even at passing away, last rites are performed so that we can respect the body of the person. In the Ramayana, there is this, when the Vanar Sena is winning, winning the war, and Ravan is getting nervous, he tells his lieutenants that, all these demonic, the demons who have died, for me on this battlefield, just throw their bodies in the, in the sea, in the ocean. And he tells that, let's do that, because he doesn't want the Vanars to feel very victorious by looking at, how many people have been vanquished in the battlefield. So someone like Ravan does not respect even the body of those people who have been serving him, with full surrender. But we also see that there was one time I was attending 3 years ago. I had this fortune of attending a seminar on last rites and Shraddh conducted by a Brahmin from Maharashtra, Satara, who runs a Ved Pathshala, etc. That seminar went on for like 8 hours on schedule. And, the Brahmana kept telling that, no, this is, I'm just able to give you only like a glimpse of, what really needs to be done. I can't get into all of these details. And in that seminar, he talked about how when he heard that even the elephants, they perform last rites in their own way, for the dead body. So if somebody from their herd, one of the elephants from their herd passes away, these elephants they dig a hole. They put the body inside, they cover it with a lot of different, twigs, leaves, flowers, fruits, all of these things. They fast for a day, they don't eat for a day, they just assemble in silence throughout that place. And then as they move on, with the pack together, they come back after a year to the same place. And they again make those offerings, and they again have a vow of, they fast on that particular day, but they also do it in a celebratory spirit on that time. So even the animals are doing, and there are various bird species that do it. There are various, I don't remember the exact species, but somebody from the ape family, one of the species from the ape family, the monkeys, they also observe in their own way, when somebody is passing away. And then they respect the body. They perform those last rites. So here, Yudhishthir Maharaj is performing the last rites for a great spiritual personality, a great Vaishnava like Yudhishthir Maharaj is performing the last rites for a great spiritual personality and a great Vaishnava like Bhishma Dev. And there are various reasons. So one of them we talked about is respecting the person, the body of the person who has departed, and also as a prescribed duty. So we hear so much about prescribed duties. Srila Prabhupada stresses so much on prescribed duties when we read the Bhagavad Gita and in his various lectures. So this is one of the prescribed duties of the son. And if the son is not present, as Srila Prabhupada explains, that, Yudhishthir Maharaj is the eldest grandson. So it is his prescribed duty to perform the last rites for his family members. And now here we are seeing the passing away of a great devotee of the Lord. So they don't undergo the different things that, say, a person who may not be in Krishna consciousness may undergo after the passing away, because different people go through different destinations, they go through different, you know, different journeys at the time of at passing. Some are taken by the Vishnudutas, the devotees of the Lord. Some are taken by the, you know, the caretakers of the heavenly planets. Some are taken away by the Yamadutas, you know, like that. So last rites are also performed so that for other personalities who may be going through the difficult path of Yamaduta, is to relieve them from any kind of trauma that comes on the path as they're passing away. So all the different rituals that are done while the body is being, you know, during the funeral of the person and also during the passing of the 13 days and the entire year and subsequent years is done to protect them from any kind of trauma that they might be going through on their onward journey. And also Srila Prabhupada talks about offering of prasadam in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And, you know, we, by performing of these last rites properly, according to the proper rituals, we raise these people up by the offering of prasad, elevating them to the next level in Krishna consciousness. Now, Yudhishthir was doing also this by expressing his gratitude. So we do our prescribed duties. But the higher principle of doing the prescribed duties here that Yudhishthir Maharaj was doing towards Bhishma Dev was out of gratitude for all that he had received from Bhishma Dev, as you know, already described in the purport by Srila Prabhupada. And according to the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, there are the different, they're called as the deaths, the rins, that each of us human beings have. The Brihadaranyaka Upanishad talks about three. And then there is the Shatpat Brahman that talks about two more. But I'll just give you a brief understanding. So one of them is the Devarin, the debt that we have towards the Devis and Devtas, the presiding deities in the material world. Then the Rishirin, the debt that we have towards our teachers, our spiritual masters, our mentors. Then we have the Pitrurin, the debt that we have to our parents and our departed family ancestors, and even those who may have been our peers in our family lineage. And then there is the Naririn, which is the rin that we have, or the debt that we have towards the entire humanity. And we have the Bhutarin. The Bhutarin is towards all different living entities. So the Devarin is usually we express, or we overcome that, or we, you know, by doing, performing proper chanting of mantras, performing different sacrifices and all those yagyas, etc. The Rishi Rin is by proper studying the debt that we have towards our spiritual masters and our teachers is paid fully when we study the scriptures properly, we follow the instructions of our spiritual masters properly, and we take forward their mission, their mood and mission and their instructions, and we share that with different people. Now, the Pitrurin is what, Pitrurin is the forefathers. This is what Yudhishthir Maharaj is now, like what we are seeing in this particular verse, is basically by proper performance of the last rites and the Shraddha Karma, like the yearly observance of their departure day, by keeping the family traditions, their values, their legacy, and by having progeny and children. And we can see that for one of, like, Pitrurin, etc., Prabhupada has explained in different places. And also about carrying out the family traditions properly is something Arjuna is worried about before the war in the first chapter. We see that. And the nirin, the rin that we have towards the entire humanity, is by respecting people, caring for them, being charitable. And towards different subhumans, different species, is by, again, respecting them and offering them the necessary protection. So here, Yudhishthir Maharaj is doing the last rites over here based on his emotion, his loving gratitude that he has towards Bhishma Dev, and as a part of his prescribed duties. And the reason this is stressed so much is that the veneration towards ancestors is because we are indebted to our ancestors, even because the very fact that we have these bodies is because of our parents and our ancestors. Otherwise, we wouldn't have this body to execute any of our devotional practices. They have invested, they have gone through various hardships because of which we have, you know, been given a certain platter that we are enjoying in the material world. It's because of them that we have the culture because of which we could take up to Krishna consciousness. It's their blessings, their guidance, and our physical, emotional, and spiritual development that all comes from our ancestors, something that they have blessed us with. So the principle by which these different last rites are done is not out of fear or out of, you know, like just the mere performance of a ritual, oh, I got to do this. No, the principle is gratitude, having that gratitude towards them and expressing that by doing these rituals. And again, when you're doing these rituals, there are, you know, different things that we do as a part of the process, but the mood also is important, and the mood of gratitude is important. And many times, like when I attended this Shraddh seminar, like 8-hour seminar by Godbole Swamiji from Maharashtra, I'd gone with a few more devotees in Bombay. And so I was speaking with the organizer, another lady who runs this program called as opandit.com. And, you know, she's taken it up on herself, she and her husband, is to revive all of these different traditions and different samskaras that we are missing now that, you know, that are going away. So I requested her if, you know, like, you know, where I live in Mumbai, I requested her if, you know, we could organize something very basic that, you know, people could do on a daily basis. You know, the act of doing, offering tarpan, you know, the water to the ancestors, etc., the Jalanjali that we also hear about in the Mahabharata. So I requested her that, you know, I'll invite you, we'll organize a program, and you could teach some of these things. And we could have some devotees who could give the Krishna conscious perspective on those things. So this lady, very, very nice lady, you know, doing so many wonderful things. But after hearing what she said, I realized, you know, like, you know, how merciful Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya is. What she said is that, no, how can we teach this? You know, first thing, even they don't even know Sanskrit. First we have to, you know, teach them eight years of Sanskrit so that they can learn the proper chanting of the mantras. And after that, they need to learn how to, you know, just do their daily rituals properly. So once then their mind is completely prepared. And then after that, they can then, you know, start thinking about doing this tarpan. So, I mean, with due respect to her, I said that, but that's not what we heard in the seminar that you organized. You know, the Swamiji that was there, he was telling that, you know, even if you're not qualified in all of these different things, you can at least just offer it, you know, in the right mood. She said, yes, that's what he said, so that people get inspired for this. But, you know, if you want me to come and do this, this is a 10-year program. And then I was thinking, you know, if somebody is, you know, I don't know how much lifespan I have left. And if, you know, in order to offer my gratitude to my ancestors, if I have to go through all of this detailed process for like 10 years, and only then I'm capable of offering gratitude, it, you know, I mean, I was a little discouraged by hearing all of that. And then I thought about the mercy that Srila Prabhupada has given to us, you know, with the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and how Srila Prabhupada has simplified things for us, where the focus is not so much on the ritual or the perfection of the mantras, etc., but the focus is on the proper chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and in offering ourselves with, you know, the proper mood of service. So yes, the gratitude is the principle, but we as devotees don't want to get too hung up on like whether we are doing the ritual properly or not. What we want to focus more on is our mood. Because when we have the right mood, that is what is going to help us purify ourselves, that is what is going to please Krishna, and that is what is going to help our ancestors in their onward journey. Now, when a person leaves the body, there's a lot of difficult trauma that a person goes through, and I'm talking about a soul that is attached. Devotees are, you know, by proper, you know, attraction towards Krishna and by proper following of the, you know, the teachings of the spiritual master, it are detached, you know, and are on the path of going back to Godhead. But at the same time, none of us can know who really is, you know, like based on the teachings that we have from our spiritual masters and, you know, what we have in the Shastras and the Guru Sadhu Shastra, we know that who is the right candidate to go back to Godhead. But we can't assume things for ourselves. And also, we know that they've gone back to Godhead just like Bhishma Dev. But we still perform some of these rituals as prescribed by Srila Prabhupada for all of us to also set an example like that. So the last rites are performed to, you know, facilitate the onward journey, because any life transition that we have needs a lot of support, needs a lot of preparation, and needs a lot of support. And therefore, you will see that different life transitions, there is always a samskara, like the 16 samskaras that are described, right, beginning from Garbhadhan and ending to Antyeshti, the last rites. So each of these need a proper samskara, a proper ritual, proper ceremony that needs to be performed. Now, when the ceremony is performed, it is having, you know, we are inviting the blessings and the mercy of, you know, our spiritual masters and the Lord Himself and the elders that are there. But these ceremonies also create different, you know, mental impressions that prepare our mind so as to be able to take our duties seriously that come with that transition. So an example is the Vivaha Samskara. So we see a lot of these marriages that are court marriages happening. Or some people go through the proper yagya, the fire sacrifice for the Vivaha Samskara, the wedding, the wedding rituals. Now what happens is when the wedding ritual is performed properly, and, you know, the bride and the groom are focused on it, they are receiving, by the chanting of the mantras, by the blessings of all the assembled devotees and the Vaishnavas and the gurus, they are receiving the proper blessings. They are receiving the proper blessings that are needed, you know, for them to be able to take that next step. And it is a tough step. Similarly, when, you know, somebody is trying to have a child, there is the preparation of the body and the mind and the spiritualizing of the consciousness by the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra through the Garbhadhan Samskar. So the Garbhadhan Samskar is, as Srila Prabhupada has explained, you know, we chant properly. But it is also explained that, you know, like, you know, Ayurvedically also the body is purified of, you know, any kind of imbalances that also affect the mind, and the mind is purified. So it's a preparation for the next step. So similarly, this, the proper performance of the last rites helps the soul in their onward journey. And we do know that devotees go back to Godhead, but we still prepare for the, like in software we say, edge cases, when we're trying to test software. So we prepare for the worst case scenarios and we do our duty. Now, just a brief description of, you know, some aspects of the onward journey. So when the soul leaves the body, right, there is, they receive something called as the Vayavik Sharir. And the references, I mean, this is all explained in the Garuda Puran in great detail. So the Vayavik Sharir is the air body. They don't have the earth element in that body. And in that air body, that soul is not able to express its emotions to its loved ones. The soul is dealing with that extreme shock. I mean, when we lose our job, how shocking it is. You know, it's like somebody, you know, taking away part of our identity. But when somebody dies, it's like, you know, the complete identity is taken away from the person. And they're torn away from that material identity. It's very, very painful. So the soul is going through that pain, plus it's an air body. Now, the different food offerings that are done on the day of the departure and the remaining 13 days help prepare the preta body for the soul. Like, so this preta body is grosser than the subtle body, but subtler than the gross body. Should I say that again? It's grosser than the subtle body. It's like subtle body cannot touch and feel as much as you could probably feel the preta body. But it is not as gross as a gross body. It's subtler than the gross body, right? So the food that is offered throughout the various 13 days helps create that particular body. By the 11th day, you know, the preta body is ready and then, you know, is very hungry because it hasn't eaten for so many days. You know, the body is being created. So therefore, then the feast is held in their honor on the 12th and the 13th days. So, and the food that is something that is dear to them is prepared because, and it is mentioned in the Garuda Puran that please make that food that is really something that, you know, they really enjoy because they're hungry and they want to eat. And after that, like, and we're talking about the worst case scenario, not talking about devotees who go back to Godhead, the Vishnu Dutas take them. Now after that, what happens is that they go through the different, because they meet Yamaraj, they go through the different, now even in the Yamalok Puri, they go through the different 12 or 16 different Yamalok, like different places in Yamalok, different Puris, different places in Yamalok. And what happens is that in that journey, they're not getting any food, right? There's a lot of hardships in that journey. So every month after the departure of the person, the food that is offered is basically the food that sustains them. Because once in a month, they get a chance to stop, take some rest. And that is the day when you're offering food. And that is what is nourishing them. So even when the person leaves the body, like, you know, how would we have served the person when the person was with us? We would care for them. Now, just because their body has changed, just because they're in a different zone, doesn't mean that our care for them, you know, just because we can't express it in the same way, doesn't mean that we don't do that. So, and when they don't receive that food on, you know, those days every month, like, I think it's described that once in a month is one day for them, something like that. So when you're offering food, they're receiving food for the different days. And they, because of the offering, their onward journey becomes a little peaceful. And also, the food is also offered for the Yamadutas and the dogs that accompany, etc., so that they don't trouble the soul that much. They're satisfied. Now, even after the yearly rituals, like you observe like a one-year period is over, it is, and this is not just in, you know, the Bharatiya, like the Vaishnav culture that we have. There are food offerings that are done on the Tithi, the day of the departure, every single year. Then there are food offerings that are done on Amavasya, like the no moon days. There are actually 96 different days in a year on which, you know, one must, it is mentioned, one must remember the ancestors. But for us, what we can do is at least remember them on the day of their departure by proper offering of prasadam, as Srila Prabhupada explains in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And during the Pitru Paksha day also, like the 15 days of the Shraddha ceremony that comes around September, October, you observe their tithi. So what happens is that now these different souls, by our food offerings, they are being nourished. And it's not just food, it's prasadam. Even if you get the most ritualistic brahmana out there and you get them to do the Shraddha ceremony for you, they will make you cook. They will first make you offer it to Lord Shri Krishna, Vishnu, and then offer it to your ancestors. So these are prasadam offerings that reach them and that elevate them in their Krishna consciousness, wherever they are, and help them, you know, go to the next path. Now many times, like, I once did this presentation in December in Mumbai, and we had a full house, then we had to repeat this thing like 3 or 4 times with, you know, lots of devotees and other people coming in. As we did focus on this, the idea was that, like, many people ask this question that, okay, we're offering food over here, how does the food, you know, reach them? Like, what is the mechanism of that? And this is also something that Garudji asks, you know, Lord Shri Krishna in the Garud Puran. I mean, Lord Vishnu in the Garud Puran, that, okay, if you're, you know, cooking food here and offering here, like, what is the mechanism by which it reaches? So it reaches by the, you know, the different demigods that are there, the Adityas and the Varanas, the Lord, you know, the Surya Devta also transfers the food. And then they are said to enter the body of the Brahmana, you know, who you have, or the Vaishnavas who you are offering the food to. And it is through them that they accept. And this pastime has been described in the Ramayana, where Sita and Lord Ram, when they are offering the Shraddha ceremony for Dasharatha Maharaj, like, she gets very fearful and she, you know, runs away from there when the Brahmanas come. And then Lord Ram and Lakshman perform, you know, the ritual of serving the Brahmanas. And then Lord Ram asks her, like, what happened? Why did you leave? And then she says that, you know, I'm in, you know, these clothes of a forest dweller. I've never come before my father-in-law like that. But I saw that, you know, the three Brahmanas you called, I could see, you know, Dasharatha Maharaj in the body of one of the Brahmanas. And I was very, very embarrassed to be in front of him like that. So the souls enter the body, they accept the prasadam offerings, and they're waiting. You know, they're dependent on these different offerings. So there are various details like that. A little bit more focus on, you know, another aspect that why these last rites and these rituals are done properly is also to help relieve the trauma that they may have gone through, or relieve them from any kind of karmic debts, etc., that they may be going through. And there are various studies that are being done in this field by the scientists themselves. There's a field called as epigenetics. So we've heard of the genome, you know, the map, the entire map of who we are as a being. But there's an epigenetics that sits on top of it that decides, you know, which genes get expressed and which genes don't get expressed. And it's almost like, you know, you have the piano with the or the harmonium, you have it with the entire keyboard with all the music that's possible. The epigenetics is the fingers that are playing and, you know, deciding which genes get expressed and which don't. And there's a European Molecular Biology Organization in Spain, closer home here, where they did some studies on putting, you know, certain types of worms through different traumatic situations. And when they were put in those very warm temperatures, they would glow. I'm talking about physical changes here that happen to the body. And what they did is they put those worms in, you know, that warm temperature for over like, for some time. And then they saw that when they bought those worms in cooler temperature, they were still glowing. And then what they did is for five generations of those worms, they kept them only in warm temperature. So these worms were just glowing. And then the 14 generations, and I was very amazed by the number 14, something that connects, you know, in our culture. When they saw that for five generations, those worms were put in very warm temperature, 14 generations of those worms were like glowing continuously. So what they saw is that the trauma that comes in, you know, it transfers over different generations through, you know, how the genes are being expressed. And also there's this professor of psychiatry at Mount Sinai, the Icahn School of Medicine. Her name is Rachel Yehuda. She's born in Israel, you know, Jewish practitioner, lives in the U.S. and lived in a neighborhood which was, you know, a lot of Jewish people, but also all those Jewish people who escaped the Holocaust. They went through the trauma of the Holocaust, but they, you know, somehow escaped and they came here. And what she observed is that, you know, there are the descendants of these Holocaust survivors, they have altered stress hormones. So their ability to bounce back from trauma and stress is very, very low. And this is not just talking about the people who went through that Holocaust trauma. This is talking about like the third generation. That's what we have right now. Like they're talking about the third generation also. They've had all these gene changes inside. And connecting with that, there is this work that is also being done by this German psychiatrist who was a German missionary, you know, in South Africa. And his name is Bert Hellinger. And I believe some devotees also practice this type of healing. So Bert Hellinger was this German missionary who was posted in South Africa. And, you know, he developed some very good relationships with the Zulu tribe there. And what he observed is that when the Zulu tribe had any issue, whether it was a husband-wife issue or a relationship issue in the tribe or a health issue in the tribe, etc., they had various mechanisms to solve it. And one of the mechanisms, which now he calls it as family constellations, I'm sure you would have heard about it. What he saw is that, like, the head, the leader of the tribe would make, like, you know, say if I approach this, you know, if I'm part of the Zulu tribe and I approach this person that I have so-and-so problem, they'll make me stand, like, beside. The only person who knows about my problem is the leader of the tribe. And he'll just make different people stand as in a constellation representing, one of them will represent me. And these are random people chosen from the tribe who have no idea of what my discussion was. And they'll be standing there, like say if I have a problem with, Mataji B, so there'll be somebody representing that Mataji B. And what they do is they just be quiet and nobody knows anything. And these are not like special people chosen who are specially attuned. There's regular people chosen. And everyone is quiet, and then they are asked to, the tribe leader will say that, oh, some issue is there, and let's see what comes up. And these different random people who have no connection with the problem, they're just supposed to be quiet for some time, and then they start speaking about, you know, what energies they're feeling and what's coming to their mind. And more often than not, even with them having no background of what's happening, they are able to say things that, you know, I would be feeling. Or, you know, what I'm going through. And there are videos that you could watch online. And someone did it for me remotely. Like, I wasn't there, but someone did it for me remotely. There was some devotee organizing this program. I think her name is Krishna Priya Mataji from New Vrindavan. She was doing this program in India, and some devotee did it for me. And they just made two people represent me. And I was just shocked at, like, you know, what I saw in that video. It was, they don't know me, they have no idea of what, you know, who I am, etc. And I was so shocked at what was happening. So this is the concept of, and through that, through whatever comes up, they're able to resolve the issue. And many times, they have to involve the ancestors also, the deceased ancestors. And what they've seen in this family constellation system is that a lot of, you know, unresolved trauma that some of our ancestors would have gone through, it is transferring and, you know, creating, you know, all those different situations for me, or I'm responding to their trauma in a certain way. And it's different scientists, like the scientists who recognize this, etc., and they call it as the morphic resonance. So we talked about the physical stuff that happens with the epigenetics and, you know, with Rachel Yehuda's study. But we're also talking about how these energies get transmitted. And then Bert Hellinger goes into great detail talking about, you know, who is a family member, what are the different orders, what are the different rules, etc. And when you do a proper, you know, understanding of what the Shraad rituals entail, there are Shraad rituals that actually take care of all of these different traumas that we have in our system, right? So when I was studying family constellations and I was trying to understand that, I was discussing it with, you know, my spiritual mentor, His Grace Govind Prabhu in Chaupati, and then he said, oh, come on, this is just Shraad. You know, we just do our Shraad properly, we do the last rites properly, and all this is taken care of. And when you read and you understand, you know, what the Shraad Samskara and the Antyeshti Samskara is all about, there are different rituals for different people. The rituals for a married person are very different from the rituals for an unmarried person. There are unmarried person hoping to get married, you know, with the desire to get married. They have different rituals because they're leaving with that desire. Their rituals are different for people who died in a war, died in an accident, you know, people whose bodies were not recovered. Like we saw a lot of these air crashes, you know, over the sea. So people whose bodies are not recovered, elderly people, people who died diseased, etc. So there are different rituals, the way the body is prepared, the way the food offerings are done, the special things that are done. And it all addresses the any kind of inherent trauma that could be transferred to the subsequent generations through morphic resonance or through genes, etc. And also like the desires, like, you know, that people leave with, like, when I was doing this presentation, I did it like 3 times in Mumbai. I had different people come and share a lot of personal experiences with me. And one of them, they said that like one of the rituals that happens during the last rites, like after the body has been, you know, cremated, is that there is food offered to the crow on that particular day. And you would know the success of your ritual by whether the crow would accept the food or not. And many people came up to me and said that, you know, when we did the so-and-so ritual for, you know, my parents, and then the crow didn't accept the food. And the way to understand that is that what this, what like is explained is that there may be some desires that the person still left with. And then the people assembled, they commit to taking responsibility of those things. So one person said that when my father passed away, and we did all these rituals, the crow refused to take the food. And he said, we were 4 brothers, you know, trying our best to get the crow to eat. And then he said that his eldest brother said, probably my father's worried about our mother. And then he said that I take full responsibility to take care of my mother. And when he said that, immediately the crow flew in, took the prasadam, and then left. So there are various different signs like that that are there that, you know, that are part of our system and that is part of the, you know, the story also. And so that is how the proper doing of these rituals address the trauma, address any kind of difficulties that may be transferring through generations, and any kind of difficulties that soul, that departed soul may have faced. So that is how we take care of it. And I know I'm out of time, but do I have 2 minutes? Okay, I'll just finish. There are various instances in our shastras also, like, you know, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Narsingadev instructs Prahlad Maharaj to do the proper rituals for Hiranyakashipu. Lord Ram instructs Vibhishan to perform the last rites for Ravana. Lord Ram instructs Sugriva and Angad and Tara to perform the last rites for Vali. And in all 3 instances, the Lord says that because, you know, they have been delivered by me, their body has been purified, their life is purified, you know, they are on their path. They have reached the destination, but I still want you to do these things because it's pleasing to me and it's to set a proper example. And then Dhritarashtra tells Yudhishthir Maharaj, even in the war, after the war, because he's so concerned about, you know, the number of people who left their body because of the war. So he tells Yudhishthir Maharaj to perform the last rites for all the different soldiers and all those who died in the battlefield. And then Yudhishthir Maharaj, assisted by Daumya, Vidura, Sanjaya, etc., You know, each and every person's last rites are done properly. And then we have the story in the Srimad Bhagavatam about Sagara, King Sagara and his grandson, you know, like how the 60,000 sons, they offend great sage, and then Anshuman does tapasya, and then Dilip, King Dilip does tapasya, etc. And then how finally Bhagirath, and then Lord Brahma blesses him. Bhagirath asks, you know, okay, how come you're, you know, giving this, you know, as a reward to my tapasya, not for my ancestors? And he says that, no, your ancestors had a lot of karmic debt, which, you know, you have, you know, taken care of finally by, you know, three generations of tapasya. So just like we are beneficiaries of all the great, you know, things that the ancestors have done, we are also beneficiaries of the liabilities or the karmic debt that has been incurred, and it is our duty to help release that. And in ancestors are also remembered, and gratitude is expressed at every step. Like when you see that before his coronation ceremony, Yudhishthir and Draupadi, they perform the Shraddha Samskara, the ritual of remembering the ancestors and offering food to the ancestors, prasadam to the ancestors. Dhritarashtra and Gandhari, after they are initiated in Vanaprastha Dharma, and before they're leaving for the forest, Dhritarashtra expresses his desire to, you know, remember the departed ancestors and do proper offering of prasadam to them and all his sons who have left. So there are different times at which we remember our ancestors, just like we remember our gurus. And and again, it's an act of gratitude. And a lot of people say that, I mean, I know it's a prevalent thing, something I grew up hearing also, is that, oh, if we don't do this to our ancestors, then they'll get upset and they'll create trouble in our life and things like that. But that's not the point. The point is we're doing it as an act of gratitude. And the only reason that there are troubles that are happening if, you know, ancestors are not being taken care of properly is not because they want to trouble you, not because they're mean or not because they don't mean well. It's because they themselves are undergoing some trouble, and that's their way to attract attention. That, you know, you need to do something for me. Because when somebody goes through, like, really, you know, bad phase of life, you eventually see an astrologer, and the astrologer will tell you there is a Pitru Dosh that you need to take care of. So that is their way of, because they're waiting for your prasadam offerings so that they can move forward. And ancestor veneration is across world cultures. Of course, the Eastern tradition, we have China, Korea, Vietnam, Philippines. In Africa, we have it in Madagascar, Senegal, Zambia, Egypt, the Slavic culture, the pre-Christian, you know, the religion and traditions that were followed, you know, Halloween, All Saints Day, All Souls Day, etc. All of these different places, they recognize. I'm trying to compile all of this and make a small booklet. I have it ready. I have to go through the editing, etc. Once it's ready, I will share it with the devotees. So in conclusion, we do perform these prescribed duties, which includes all the 16 samskaras and the veneration of ancestors, because it helps us make advancement by the practice of gratitude, helps us develop humility. It is pleasing to the Lord. We receive the blessings of the Lord and the departed ancestors. It creates proper mental impressions on us and future generations. It elevates our ancestors. And pure devotees are free from such debts. Those who are engaged in Krishna consciousness in pure devotional service are free from such debts, but they still do it to set an example. So thank you very, very much. I'm very grateful to get this opportunity to share this. And as I conclude, I seek forgiveness for all the mistakes I've committed. And I'm happy to, hear from this August Assembly of Devotees any discussion on this topic.